helpers are making sure the kids have their outlines for today. All right. If you've got your Bibles, adults or kids, you want to find James chapter 5. That's where we will be reading from today. All right, somebody go to the back. All right, James chapter 5, verses 1 through 6 is where we'll be at today. I know the song that we sang there at the end, I've heard it before, but it's been a while since I heard it, and we sang it at the associational meeting, didn't we, Pastor Joe? Isn't that where it was? I'm telling you what, man, over at the Rock Church, where they've just relaunched, they've had about a month's worth of services in there, and man, I'm telling you what, we had a wonderful time in there. The whole night was great. Pastor Eddie Johnson, if you don't know Pastor Eddie Johnson, he's at Macedonia Baptist Church over by, what is it, Burger King, that area, Hightower, in Hightower Street. You need to get to know it, Pastor Eddie. He is an amazing guy. He brought a great word. We sang that song. It was a wonderful, wonderful night. All right, kids, everybody got their outline? Everybody got outline, kids? Did some of the adults take some of them, too? All right, good job. All right, you make sure you follow along, okay? So today is an interesting, yes, sir. Okay, well, you go sit down, all right? Never a dull moment, right? Today's passage is going to be an interesting one, but before we get started, let's go over our new memory verse for the month, all right? So we got a new one. For those of you who were here this Wednesday for Wednesday Bible study, this will sound familiar because we read this one this Wednesday, and I liked it so much that I thought we'd all learn it together. All right, here we go. Is everybody ready? All right, here we go. Psalms 84:10. For a day in your courts is better than a thousand elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord than dwell in the tents of the wicked. Psalm 84:10. All right. So it's hard to imagine that we're almost to the end of James. After this Sunday, we've only got 2 more weeks in the book of James. You may think, God, we've been here forever. For me, it seems like we just started yesterday. But we've actually been walking through the book of James since August, since school started. So that's actually a pretty long time. We've been doing good. Today's passage, though, marks an interesting moment in the book of James. Because up to this point, remember the book of James, the brother of Jesus, writes to a group of believers who are struggling, who need help, who need assistance. And the majority of the things that James talks about are our inner faith community issues, right? So it may be things that they're struggling with, things that they need help on, or even conflict amongst them. All right, is everybody with me so far? Today is a little different because while James is speaking to the church, he's speaking to a group of the church that is having issues with people outside the church. All right? So here's the difference. Up to today, it's been inner church issues, drama, or helps, or specific needs that the church has. Today, James is going to talk about an issue that people in the church have with other people outside the church. All right? And the whole kind of paragraph actually goes on further down than what we're going to read today. But I decided to break it up into two. So today, listen up. Today, James is going to talk about the problem that is out. He's going to dedicate his talk, these 6 verses, to the people who are causing the problem, who are outside the church. All right? Next week, he's going to talk about the people inside the church who are struggling with the problem and what their response should be to the problem from people outside the church. All right. Is everybody with me this morning? I know it's like the first day of fall break. I mean, of fall, we fell back last night, and some of us are kind of like, I should still be asleep, or I should be doing chores right now, or eating lunch, okay? So listen, everybody with me. There's a problem. People inside the church are struggling with a problem outside the church. Today, we're going to talk about the problem makers or the causers. Next week, we're going to talk about the response, all right? So, in order to do this, when we read the verses in just a minute, you're going to intuitively know what the problem is, okay? James is very blunt, like he's been the entire up to this point in his book, very blunt. And so you're going to know what the problem is, all right? What I want to do, though, is frame the context of our talk in James based off two stories that Jesus tells. And I want to do that so we can answer a bigger question than of not just what, but why. All right? So the question we're going to try to answer today is, why are the problem causers so bad? Okay? Everybody with me? Why are the problem causers so bad? Kids, what question are we trying to answer?
Why are the problem causers so bad?
Thank you. Glad y'all are listening so far. Hang with me. All right. So I want to tell you, I want to frame this with two parables from Jesus, okay? One will be a little bit more known than the other one. I'm going to tell you the least known one. Thank you. Least known one first, all right? It's called the parable of the workers in the vineyard, all right? Parable of the workers in the vineyard. If you don't jot this down, a passage down, you can go back and read it later. It's Matthew 20, 1 through 16. Matthew 20, 1 through 16. All right, so here's what happens. Jesus tells a parable about a guy who owns a vineyard. Now, if you owned a vineyard in this time, you were somewhat of a more wealthy status than not, okay? And as you'll see in just a minute, this guy's pretty wealthy because he needs a lot of help picking the grapes out of his vineyard, all right? So he goes early in the morning at 6 o'clock. And he goes and finds helpers, probably in the marketplace, day laborers, because he needs help. His grapes are ready. He needs to pick them that day and get them all picked so he can press them so they can make wine out of it. Most likely, that's kind of how that process worked. All right? So, he goes at 6 a.m. and hires a group of guys and says, hey, if you'll work for me today in the vineyard, I'll pay you one denarius. That would be like equal to one day's wage. So whatever that is, I'll cut you, in today's lingo, I'll cut you a check, hours times minimum wage, right? Whatever that is, let's just say it's $100. I know it's a little much, but let's just say $100. If you work for me today, I'll give you $100 at the end of the day. Well, at 3 hours later at 9 a.m., he says, we ain't going to get done. I got to go find some more people. So he goes back and finds more guys at 9. Then he says at lunchtime, we ain't going to get done. I got to have some more help. So he goes back at 12 and gets more, does it at 3 p.m., and gets more. So he's got guys at 6, 9, 12, and 3 p.m. And all of them, which he has said, if you'll come work for me, I'll give you $100. I'll give you one day's worth of pay, one denarius. Well, it is like down to the 9th hour, the 11th hour, actually, right? And he's like, we're not going to get done. I've got to get this done today. So he goes back at 5 p.m., we're cutting off at 6 p.m. That's the end of the day, is at 6. Goes back at 5 p.m. and says, hey, guys, I really need your help. We've got to get these grapes picked, man. They're going to rot. It's going to rain tonight. Da, 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 you know, the whole nine yards. And he pulls these guys in. He says, if you'll work for me today, I'll give you $100. I'll give you one denarius. 1 hour? Sign me up. Right? So these guys come in. They finish out the day. They get all the grapes picked. And it's kind of settling an accounts time. So the guys who get... Who got there first, they come through line, pays them their money, pays everybody the money. Then the people at 9 and 12 and 3, and then he gets down to the end, and he pays them the same money that he paid the guys at the front. Well, the guys at the front get mad, and the owner's response is, what did you agree to work for? One day's worth of pays. I gave you exactly what I said I was going to give you, so don't be mad. I gave them exactly what I said I was going to give them. So nobody ought to be mad because you agreed to work for what I said I'd pay you. And all of these parables that Jesus tells, most of them relate a story about God's character or our response to God's role and who God is. Well, in this parable, Jesus is trying to portray a point about God and how God works with his people, with his children. And kids, on your first little picture right there of the people picking grapes. Here's what you need to know, adults and kids. Out of this first idea, from this first parable, we learn that God always treats his followers equally or fairly. Okay? God always treats his followers equally or fairly. Did he underpay anybody? Did the owner underpay anybody in the parable? No. Did he do exactly what he said he was going to do for everybody? Yes. Right? And Jesus' point is, that's how God relates to us. God's never going to underserve you. He's never going to withhold what he's promised to give you. He's going to treat every one of you equally and fairly. We might get upset, listen, we might get upset with the person who makes the deathbed confession after living a life of debauchery and sin. But whose problem is that? Not God's. It's ours. Because we're being partial. Right? So, in the parable, Matthew, of the workers in the vineyard, God always treats his followers fairly and equally. All right, now I'm going to tell you another one. This one you probably know a lot more easily. It's called the parable of the talents. And in the parable of the talents, you have an owner who's going away on a long journey. And the owner gives three servants, three people, three different amounts of money. All right? The amounts aren't important. He gives three different people different amounts of money based on their ability. And he says, hey, I'm going to go a long way. I don't know when I'm going to be back. But I want you to take these resources and I want you to multiply them and use them to make more resources, because that's kind of business, right? And so the people go out. And they do. And two of the servants who were given resources come back. When the owner comes back, he says, hey, what would y'all guys do? Well, two of the guys come back, and they had doubled the money the guy gave them. So one of them received 10, and he made 10 more, like, you know, piles of money, like Scrooge McDuck, you know, piles of money. The other guy had 5 piles of money, and he made 5 more. But the third servant, he didn't do anything with his resources, right? Nothing. He buried him in the ground, covered it up, and said, hey, when my guy gets back, I'll just kind of plead ignorance and just be like, well, I was afraid I was going to lose it all. Well, when the owner comes back, guy digs up his money and says, hey, look, I know you were like, you're a tough dude, and I didn't want to mess up, and I didn't want to lose all your money, so I just didn't do nothing with it. And instead of rewarding the third servant like he did the first two, because when the first two came up and said, hey, we took the money, the piles of money that you gave us, and we made more piles of money, the owner said, hey, great job, guys, man, come on in, let's have a party up in here. But he doesn't say that to the third, right? Here's what he says to the third one: you wicked servant, you took what I had and didn't do nary, this is the Southern slang version, didn't do a nary thing with it. Get out of here, you're gone. You're out of here. Shoo. Ha. And he kicks the dude out. And remember, this parable too tells us something about God, right? And us at the same time. The first parable says God treats all of his people fairly and equally. This parable says that God gives every one of his kids gifts, and he rewards those who use them to make profits for the kingdom of God, right? So, kids, in your second little picture there of the three guys who bring in the gifts, and one of them's like, right? Here's what you need to write. God always gives his gifts, followers his gifts. He rewards those who use them to further the kingdom. All right, so here's our two stories, okay? You got it? Everybody with me? Over here, God treats his people equally and fairly. Over here, God's going to give you gifts. He rewards you if you use them for his benefit and for his kingdom. All right, now we're going to read James, and I want you to see if you can figure out the difference between these two stories and the one in James. Okay, we're going to, kids, the word is contrast. Contrast. I know some of y'all learned that in school this year. Here we go. James 5, verse number 1. Come now, you rich, weep and howl for the miseries that are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver have corroded, and the corrosion will be evidence against you, and will eat your flesh like fire. You have laid up treasures in the last days. Behold, the wages of the laborers. Listen to these next two verses. Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, are crying out against you. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts. You have lived on the earth in luxury and in self-indulgence. You have fattened your hearts in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the righteous person. He does not resist you. All right, so what's going on? Did y'all see what happened? All right, so here's what happened. So make sure we're all on the same page. All right, listen, kids. Listen. So here's what happened. A landowner, or landowners, just like in the two stories, hired workers to come in and do a job for them. But instead of, at the end of the day, or at the end of the tight season, paying them what they agreed on, the owners of the land said, no, thanks for your help, we're going to keep your wages in our pockets. Right? That's called fraud. All right? Fraud. That's called illegal. Okay? All right? Kids, if your friend says, if you'll eat this worm and I'll give you $5, and you eat the worm and the other kid doesn't give you $5, that's fraud, because you just ate a stinking worm and didn't get no $5 out of it. Would you agree that's not? There you go. Right. Whatever it is, you didn't get the money that you deserve. That's what's going on here. All right? So look, listen. So, all right? So James is harshly talking not to the people inside the church, but the people outside the church, okay? Outside the church. And he is really letting them have it because they're frauding people inside the church. But here's the question I had, all right? And this kind of gets us down a little bit deeper. Listen, why is James castigating, excoriating, talking down to these wealthy people, but yet God, who's the hero of the first two stories, is also portrayed as a wealthy landowner? Seems kind of odd, right? You know, usually we picture, you know, God's not the wealthy landowner, or the people of God are not the wealthy landowner. They're like, you know, the Robin Hood figures, you know, take from the rich and give to the poor. But in these two parables, you don't see that. The God figure, the person who represents God in the two Matthew parables, is a wealthy landowner. But yet James is excoriating wealthy landowners here. And you have to ask yourself, why is that happening? Well, we intuitively know because the wealthy landowners in James are defrauding people, right? They're saying they're going to do one thing and then they don't pay them when the people come across. But why is that such a big deal, right? Again, we want to get to the root of this issue. Why is that such a big deal, right? Well, the reason it's such a big deal is because these people who have means are not being consistent and are not portraying God's character and God's nature to the people who work for them, right? So what did the wealthy landowner in the parable of the workers in the vineyard do? He paid them exactly what he said that he was going to pay them, right? You work 12 hours, you get a denarius. I ask you, because I'm in a crunch, to work 1 hour for a denarius. Everybody gets a denarius. Everybody gets $100. We all go home happy. My grapes are picked. It's going to flood. Do whatever. You got paid. You did work, right? So they work. They get paid exactly what they say they were going to get paid. What happens in our story? In James, you come work for me. He says they're doing two things. They're mowing field and they're harvesting, meaning they're probably cutting wheat, which they had to do by hand, right, which was very labor intensive. And so he got all his fields, the wealthy landowner or landowners, got all their fields cut, got all their wheat or barley or oats or rye, whatever they were cutting, got all of their product in the barn, hay stacked for the animals, and yet didn't pay the workers what he said he was going to pay them. Doesn't matter what he said he was going to pay them. It doesn't matter the amount. They didn't pay him, right? They agreed to work for a price they didn't get. So the wealthy landowners aren't portraying God's character because they lied to the people who produced the product for them. So on one hand, they were defrauding the people because they said they were going to do one thing and didn't do it. Now, how does the other parable come in? Well, the other parable of the talents, the landowner, what does he do? He rewards the people who do the job and says, hey, thank you for doing the job. Come into my joy. Come into my rest. Let's have a party. Man, I'm gonna load you up. But what does the landowners in James do? They don't reward the people for finishing a job and doing it well. They steal it from them. Because here's what's going to happen. They're going to go down to the local market where all their other farmer buddies are, and they're going to be talking, hey, man, I got my wheat in today. Did you get yours in? No. Yeah, buddy, I got out there. Brr. He didn't do the work. The workers did the work. So he's taking from the workers and acting like he did it himself. So he's defrauding them on two accounts, not paying them and not rewarding them for doing a good job. Even if the reward was thank you for doing a good job, he's not even giving them that. So the landowners are defrauding the people. And so what we see here, listen to me real carefully. What we see here is that wealth is not the issue. The heart is the issue. Listen to me. Wealth is not the issue. The heart is the issue. Because you and I both know that all of us, no matter of our economic position in life, are capable of defrauding someone else. Hey, I'll do this, and then this never gets done. Or I'll do this for this and that, and then something happens, right? And so the idea is not where we're at on the socially socioeconomic stratus, but it's where is our heart at? These people's heart is so far off that listen to what he says in verse number 6. Read it with me again. You, that's the landowners who are doing the defrauding, you have condemned and murdered the righteous person. Condemned and murdered the righteous person. Like they've taken it so far that it's not just enough to take their paycheck. I mean, come on. We know how this scenario plays out, right? You go to work. Come here, Tucker. Come here. All right, y'all go stand over there. This is an impromptu. No, not you. This is an impromptu illustration here. All right, my young man here, tell everybody your name.
Evan,
right. I hired him to work. All right, you work. Tired, right? Worked all day. And I said I was going to give him $100. But then I don't give you $100. You going to be mad? And then what are you going to do when you meet them down at home? You going to tell them I didn't give you $100, right? Probably so. And you going to talk bad about me. And then it's going to get back around that I don't give people their money, right? So go over there and tell them I didn't give them your $100. There you go. Throw the tools down. Good job. All right. Now y'all talk amongst yourselves. Say really loud. He didn't give me my $100. There you go. All right. Stop right there. So now what's going to happen? I still need laborers, but word has gotten out that I don't pay anybody. So come on back, Evan. Come on back up here. Then me and Evan going to have a little talk behind the woodshed. But only one of us is going to come out. Right? Come on now. Right? Because I still need workers, and I can't let my buddy here tell everybody that I don't pay. Because I still need them to go cut the rest of my wheat in field number 2. And I ain't planning on paying them either. And I still need them to go cut it without them knowing I ain't going to pay them. So, you didn't make it out of the woodshed. Sorry. In illustration. Yeah, that's exactly where I are. Y'all go sit down. Go sit down. Go sit down. All right, so you see this happen, right? Come on now. This is just first century version of what goes on still today. All right, y'all sit down. All right. So they've murdered. And so the issue is not where they're at in life. It's where their heart is at in their life. Right? And what I want to do today, I was told growing up that you can either learn by a positive example. Getting there, buddy. Getting there. You can either learn by a positive example or a negative example. What I mean is you can watch how somebody positively lives their lives and say, hey, man, that's a good idea. I need to be like them. Or you can watch negative examples in life and be like, oh, I don't need to do that. I don't want to be like them. I don't want to make that decision, right? Today we're learning by a negative example. Because James says he's telling his people this, right? So that not only he he can breathe life into their situation, but also for us today, so we can learn how not to live in life, right? And we don't want to be defrauders of people. And so how do we not defraud people? We gotta check on our heart, and we gotta know where our heart's at. And there's three things that we can conclude from this message today. All right, here's three things. Number one, you ready? Three things. Number one, God hears and sees the cries of his people when they are treated unjustly. God hears and sees the cries of his people when they are treated unjustly. Listen, whenever we go through life and we're treated unjustly, it's so amazing how the videos work out to where we're at, because I didn't know what the video was going to be about. But isn't that what we saw in the video? Separated from his family, treated unjustly, what happens? God sees and hears the cries of his people. Number two, God's character is the standard. No matter if we're in church or out of church, no matter whether we're a business person or a worker, God's character is the standard, period. It doesn't matter, Tucker, you can attest to this. I've told him and his brother this their entire lives. It doesn't matter what anybody else does. You've got to do the right thing. It doesn't matter where you're at, if you're on the bottom of the bottom in the business or at the top of the top. You got to do the right thing whether anybody else does it or not, because that's God's character, and his character is the standard. Number three, God expects me and you to treat others like he would. To treat others like he would. Whether we're cutting wheat, picking grapes, or doing a business deal, right, from the three stories we talked about today. Whatever we're doing, God expects us to treat others like he would. Here's the catch, listen to me. He expects us to treat others like he would, whether they treat us like he would or not. Listen to the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Jesus doesn't say, do unto others when they do to you like Jesus would do, then you can do to them. No, he says be proactive on the front end, not on the back end. We would all do well to remember that in our lives. God expects me and you to treat others like he would. All right, so we're going to round out this today by one word of challenge. All right, every week I'd like to leave you with one thing to work on, one thing to think about for the week. So here it is. Whether in the meeting of believers, whether in the church or in the workplace, Christ followers must always live like Jesus would. So here's the question. Are you doing that? Are you doing that? Some of us may say yes. Some of us may say maybe. Some of us say this week was a bad week. Can you ask me next week? Right? Been there. But no matter where we're at, whether we've had a good week this week, bad week, medium week, or kind of in the middle, we can always do better next week. And that's the great thing about having a new day, right? I remember hearing Nick Saban tell football players a couple weeks ago. He said, play where your feet are. And I was like, that's kind of weird and wonky. And then he explained. He said, whether you've scored a touchdown or you've gotten, he used a dirty word, but whether you've gotten beat badly, right? Whether you've scored a touchdown or gotten beat badly, you got to play the next play wherever your feet are. And you know what? Listen to me, folks. You may have had a bad week, good week, medium week. But next week's going to be a new week, and your feet going to be somewhere else. They ain't going to be where they were last week, because that was last week. It's in the past. So what I need you to do this week, and what I need to do this week, and what we need to do this week, is I need you to play where your feet are this week. So wherever your feet take you this week, no matter what challenges you face or where you go, I need all of us, we need all of us to do and live and treat other people like God would treat them this week, because our feet are going to take us somewhere else. Right? All right? So, let's do it. Play where your feet are this week. All right, let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for this day. Lord, thank you for this lesson today. And Lord, I thank you that we, Lord, I thank you that Lord, you do treat your people equally and fairly. And Lord, you do treat us with grace and mercy, Lord, even though we don't deserve it. And Lord, even as we sang this morning, there's a chasm so great between us. Lord, you bridged it and brought us to it. And even Lord, even when we are your followers, sometimes we mess up and we blow it. And Lord, yet you're still full of grace and mercy and goodness. And Lord, I pray that you would just Lord, I pray that you would continue to move in our hearts and lives. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to serve you and live for you. And Lord, I pray that you would help us to continue to seek after you. Lord, may people see Jesus in us this week. And Lord, wherever our feet take us, wherever our feet are this week, Lord, help us to play there. Lord, help us to treat others the way you would treat them. Lord, help us to remember that you're the standard. And Lord, may we have a great impact in our area of influence for your kingdom this week. In your name we pray.